To all our shows online at youtube.com/Uprising with Sonali, your subscription sustains the TV production of Uprising. Three British Muslim girls are thought to be traveling to Syria from England to join the Islamic State group. The girls, aged between 15 and 16, reportedly left their families without informing anyone. Security camera footage from Gatwick Airport shows they flew to Istanbul, possibly en route to Syria. UK Prime Minister David Cameron said the news was, quote, deeply concerning, feeding the growing fear that Western Muslims may be fueling ISIS. It is such a fear that formed the basis of a widely criticized conference last week organized by the White House called Countering Extremist Violence. Both President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry addressed the three-day summit, which many leaders from the Muslim community boycotted, angry that it was further stigmatizing their community, and which many right-wing ideologues denounced as not targeting Muslims more openly. One of the nation's most prominent Muslim civil rights organizations, Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, signed on to a joint letter with several organizations, citing their, quote, grave concerns about the summit. My guest is Hussam Ailush. He is a human rights and civil rights activist and community organizer, executive director of the Los Angeles Area Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He's a third-term elected executive board member to the California Democratic Party and also serves on the board of the Muslim American Homeland Security Congress. Welcome to Uprising, Hussam.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me.
Well, first, can you explain how this 3 days conferences is actually part of this broader effort by the Justice Department announced last year to curb homegrown terrorism, to use the right-wing phrase?
Well, I mean, the problem is that the whole program is set on false premises or inaccurate premises. It seems to be like a political stunt, mostly done for PR purposes, to allow law enforcement agencies and the government to appear as if they're doing something to address the issue of terrorism and extremism, which is a real threat. No one is debating that. There are terrorists, there are bad people there who are trying to cause harm to other people. The problem is, when it comes to the American Muslim community, those numbers are so small statistically, even the most exaggerated numbers coming from the U.S. government, point to no more than about 100 people from the American Muslim community who have joined ISIS in Syria or Iraq. So,
and this is a community of many millions.
It's 6 to 8 million people who are positively contributing to their country. So basically a program like that stigmatizes the whole community in a way that, imagine if we decide to announce a countering syphilis problem in some church or some Christian church or Jewish community or so, or any other community in such an unfair way. It basically stigmatizes the community and portray it or depicts it through the prism of extremism and terrorism, and that is unfair.
Who was invited to attend the summit? I understand it wasn't just domestic community groups and leaders. There were also country representatives from places like Egypt and Saudi Arabia, Bahrain and the UAE, which have very poor human rights records of their own.
And you know, this is the hypocrisy of the whole program. I mean, not to say that everyone who attended approves of such behavior. I know several people who actually attended to go and make a clear point that this program is not acceptable. But however, you pointed out very correctly, there were representatives from about 60 countries. Many of them are themselves guilty of fueling this climate of extremism, including our own government, by the way. I don't want to clear our name in it, which is part of why we object to the CVE, or Countering of Violent Extremism program. Because what it is, it tries to whitewash the real causes of that extremism. Mm-hmm. And that it's usually the repression, the political repression, the illegal occupations, our support for military coups, and representatives of the military coup governments and the repressive governments being at that meeting. It's you know, if we are to address extremism and violent extremism specifically, and which is something we fully support, let's deal with it at the root causes, not in a selective way that only targets American Muslims. Because, by the way, even according to the U.S. government, violent extremism exists in every community. The one coming from the Muslim community is actually a tiny minority in the U.S. And yet the government decided to launch such an initiative only targeting American Muslims and no other community.
Well, Hussam, let's actually hear an excerpt, watch an excerpt of President Obama's speech at the Countering Violent Extremism Conference. It was a lengthy speech, and he gave it, I understand, on the first day of the conference last week. One aspect of it stood out where he seemed to actually hit close to the truth of what really fuels terrorism.
When governments oppress their people, deny human rights, stifle dissent, or marginalize ethnic and religious groups, or favor certain religious groups over others, it sows the seeds of extremism and violence. It makes those communities more vulnerable to recruitment. Terrorist groups claim that change can only come through violence. And if peaceful change is impossible, that plays into extremist propaganda.
Hussam, what do you make of what President Obama just said? And isn't the U.S. itself and its dictatorial allies, some of whose representatives were present, the source of the problem that he seemed to refer to, but maybe not get the his own allusion?
I mean, if he's available, I would hire him. I couldn't have said it better. No one could have said it better. The only problem is he's missing the last piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's speaking about all of these real grievances and the cause of these grievances very correctly, except that he's describing it as if it has come from Mars. Some alien has dropped it on Earth. We are guilty of much of that. We are the ones fueling that occupation, that frustration. We are fueling, supporting, funding, arming that repression in much of the Middle East that is causing people to be pushed into the extreme, and then some of them unfortunately end up choosing violence as a means to responding to those injustices. So what he needed to say is to say, as he expects the American Muslim community and all communities to stand united and firmly against all form of violence and terrorism that is unjustified, of course, he needs to commit as a president of the largest superpower in the world today that we no longer will tolerate a government that engage in human rights violations, that we will no longer support and fund occupation, illegal occupation, and apartheid regimes, and governments that discriminate on the basis of religion or a sect or ethnic background. We cannot have the double talk. We cannot expect, and he cannot be preaching and patronizing American Muslims, a community that has done great work, actually, in reducing any impact of ISIS in this country. If anything, I would have loved for the president to announce a summit in which he invites American Muslims to commend them on their success in keeping ISIS out of this country. But instead of doing that, he actually invites American Muslims to patronize them, to tell them how to behave, how to teach their religion, and clear himself, vindicate his administration and former administrations and various Western countries from their responsibility for those injustices.
Now, Hussam, of course, he is also towing an tricky line because his speech and many of the speeches were more careful than right-wing commentators would have liked them to be. So on the one hand, of course, he's facing legitimate criticism from your organization and commentators like yourself. On the other hand, he's facing this very hysterical-sounding backlash from those who would have liked him to essentially demonize the entire community.
And no doubt, and that's what I said. What he is saying is something we appreciate and we commend him for not falling into the pressure or under the pressure of the right-wing elements in our society and our world today who wish to blame Muslims and Islam for the fringe elements that commit these crimes. So we commend him for that. What we would have expected more from him is more honesty and more integrity in admitting guilt or responsibility for these problems. This is not an accusation. This is not an opinion. This is a fact. We do send billions of dollars to the occupation state of Israel. We do send billions of dollars and hundreds of millions of dollars at least to the government in Egypt. We do provide diplomatic support for governments such as UAE and others, which are clearly engaged, even according to the State Department reports on human rights, engaged in major serious human rights violations. So this is not an accusation. This is not to put the president on the spot. This is about really upholding our values as Americans, which stands for liberty and justice for all.
Hussam, what has the backlash from the Muslim community been to this summit? I understand there was a Twitter campaign that entitled hashtag counter the narrative. And then there were, of course, people who did go to the conference, as you said earlier, who expressed their criticism within the conference. Congressman Keith Ellison, the only Muslim representative of Congress who actually did address. So give us a flavor of the criticism of this conference and the response from the Muslim community.
I mean, I can say overwhelmingly, almost every single civil rights organization, not just within the Muslim community, within the general public, have spoken against or in opposition of the CVE program, the Countering Violent Extremism. Now, within the Muslim community, I can tell you almost all Muslim organizations, with the exception of a handful, maybe two or three, have spoken, dozens of them have spoken against CVE and have refused to endorse the government-initiated CVE program. The largest umbrella of national Muslim organization called the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations have issued a strong statement rejecting that initiative. Locally here in Southern California, the largest umbrella of Muslim student association and organizations called the MSA West have issued a strong statement, also rejecting or refusing to endorse it just 2 days ago. The largest umbrella organization of all Southern California mosques and organizations on Saturday met and approved a resolution rejecting and refusing again to endorse this CVE program and making it clear that they endorse the resolution or the statement issued by the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. I can tell you, right, on an activist level, also the same thing. People, yeah, have rejected it and they feel targeted by such programs.
So, Hussam, as far as you understand, what exactly is this program set up to do? Aside from organizing a 3-day summit to have nice sounding speeches, how exactly, what is the plan by the Justice Department on countering violent extremism? Of course, we know since the years following 9/11, there's been a systematic infiltration of mosques and Muslim community groups, which have resulted in very little actual terrorism being rooted out. But do they have a plan?
And that is actually one of our biggest concerns, is that there haven't been transparent about the full details of the plan. All we know is that it's built on a failed model that existed in Europe, specifically in the UK, that is based on a youth radicalization analysis model, which uses certain indicators to identify people on the path of radicalization. You know, it could be how long your beard, have you started praying, do you wear a Muslim garb, quote unquote, how many times do you attend this mosque, what kind of political views do you have? And it's based on a partnership between the Muslim community and law enforcement. And unfortunately, I have to say, our trust in the integrity and the good work of federal law enforcement agencies has been shaken by many years of abuse from these same agencies, such as the FBI, which has engaged in entrapment of young Muslims, which has engaged in surveillance and spying at mosques and over people who go to the mosque. So until we have a full understanding of what the program entails, and until we can rebuild that trust, it is impossible to trust having these law enforcement agencies into our mosque and our communities, targeting us and impacting free speech. Because I can tell you, many mosques are already afraid to talk about politics, talk about important issues, for fear that they will be branded as violent extremists. Or ground for violent extremism.
Now, Hussam, the issues that you were raising earlier about the U.S.'s own culpability, we cover these on our program constantly. But when you encounter folks who don't have the background information, and all they see is the story of these three young girls, British Muslim girls, going to Istanbul to join ISIS, they're 15 and 16 years old, and it's really hard for people to understand what would drive middle-class girls who come from decent families, have access to education, who seem to be very, at least geographically, far away from where the wars are being fought. What is attracting them to go and join this very, very fundamentalist extremist organization? How do you explain it?
It is not a linear action-reaction thing. It's not a one thing. There's no one factor, of course. I just came back from a trip to France, and I can tell you the situation of minorities in general and Muslims in specific in Europe is much worse than it is here in the U.S.
So they feel disaffected.
Exactly. There's an element of marginalization, feeling disenfranchised from the larger community. You know, the sense of injustice. Also, there's a lack of understanding of Islam sometimes that plays a major role. A lot of these young people have not been that active in the Muslim community, not very well educated about Islam. So sometimes easily or more easier swayed by some of these videos and messages coming from ISIS and other terrorist groups. The reality is there are many factors, and we can say we're trying to prevent these factors from creeping into our U.S., our own land here, by making sure that Muslims are not stigmatized, are not falsely accused, are not targeted. Our youth should not grow up living to prove their innocence. Our youth should not worry about our government and our law enforcement pointing fingers at them and accusing them to be suspects until they can prove otherwise. They should be welcomed and embraced as positive contributors to our country and on many levels and every level.
And so you're saying that in Europe, the situation is much worse in terms of how Muslim communities feel marginalized, and yet it is the London model, the British model, that the U.S. government is attempting to emulate in rooting out homegrown terrorism when that is not even really a problem here in the U.S., at least not yet.
Exactly. And that model actually has been stopped in the UK. They've moved to another model because they've realized it failed.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Well,
their failed model.
I want to thank you so much, Hussam, for shedding light on this issue. And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonal, for having me.
Hussam Ailush is my guest. He's a human rights and civil rights activist and a community organizer and executive director of the Los Angeles Area Office of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. He's also the third-term elected executive board member to the California Democratic Party and serves on the board of the Muslim American Homeland Security Congress. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.